Money Roots is made possible by the support of our sponsor, Rooted Planning Group. Are you ready to take control of your financial future? Look no further than Rooted Planning Group, your trusted partner in financial well-being. At www.rootedpg.com, you'll discover a wealth of resources and expertise to help you thrive financially. Rooted Planning Group specializes in personalized financial planning, investment management, and retirement strategies. They understand that every financial journey is unique, and they're here to guide you every step of the way. With a team of experienced advisors, Rooted Planning Group is committed to helping you cultivate a secure and prosperous future. Visit www.rootedpg.com today to learn more about how Rooted Planning Group can help you grow your money roots.
Welcome to Money Roots, the podcast where personal finance gets personal. Hosted by Amy Irvine, the CEO of Rooted Planning Group. Each week, Amy and her team dig deep into the world of finance, making it more approachable and understandable for everyone, no matter where you are on your financial journey. From savings and investments to budgeting and planning, Money Roots brings you practical advice, inspiring stories, and expert insights. They believe that everyone has the potential to grow a healthy financial future, and they're here to help you nurture it. So, whether you're a financial guru or just starting to plant the seeds of your financial knowledge, this is the place for you. Get ready to uncover the tools and strategies that can help you thrive financially. So, without further ado, let's dive into today's episode of Money Roots.
Hello, podcast listeners. Welcome to today's show. This is Carrie Bean again, one of your certified financial planners here at Rooted Planning Group. And with me is Kate Welker, also one of the certified financial planners. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Hi, Carrie. Glad I get to join you today, and I am maybe a little bit excited about our topic.
Yes, we are going to continue talking about taxes during April because we know it's on your mind. Today, we're going to dive into your tax return, specifically the 1040. And if you really want to get into it, you could get your 1040 out and look at it as we go along the podcast today, because we're going to be going sort of through each line and what it means to everyone. We're hoping that this episode is really popular and that you love it. We're looking for some numbers comparable to the LSU-Iowa women's basketball game. So hope everyone out there.
Sure, we will be just as popular, Carrie. You'll have as many listeners as the game had viewers the other night.
Yes, yes. And I know everyone's very interested in taxes like they are basketball. So
yes, it's just such a thrilling and exciting topic.
Okay. Well, we'll give everybody a minute to get their return out, and we'll get ours out, and we'll kind of start going line item by line item. If you don't have your return on you, feel free to come back and listen to our episode again after a second time. So,
yeah, and this is a topic when Carrie asked me to come on and chat taxes with her. I think a lot of people just get their 1040 and file it away and don't really think about it. And I like to tell clients that I want to see your tax return because it tells me a story. So hoping we can give you a little information as well about what kind of story it can tell you.
For sure. I may be one of those people that just want to get it done and move on, but it can tell us a lot about the past, but it can give some insight and maybe some things we can do for the future to make things, you know, potentially better and just and learn ourselves what affects our tax returns. So we'll get started. We'll just start with income, which is section one or line one. And I'm just going to ask Kate questions as we go, as if I don't know, because I will say I believe Kate knows quite a bit more than me about the tax returns. So we're just going to kind of walk through and discuss. So the very first line is total amount from form W-2 box one. So let's chat about that one, Kate.
Yeah, so this is your taxable wage. And I have seen a lot of people confused sometimes about this number when they look at their W-2 because they're like, I made more than that. When it comes to your tax return, this is a great problem. You want, it's kind of nice to report less than you actually made. But what this number is your earnings minus any tax deductible items. So the primary types of deductions you will see are anything you contributed to a retirement plan, an employer-sponsored retirement plan. So this could be certain state pensions, 401k, 403b, 457, a whole lot of numbers in front of retirement plans. But all of those contributions that you made are not subject to income tax, so they take it off the top. So example, if your salary was $75,000 and you contributed $15,000 to your 401k, your box one is going to have $60,000 in it. A couple other things that you might see would be health insurance. So health insurance, as long as it's paid through your employer and through payroll deduction, is not subject to tax. You get a deduction for that. There's a couple other fringe benefits that could be deductible, an HSA if you're contributing, a flexible savings plan. Those are primarily the items we see come off as a tax deduction.
Yeah, that's good information. Also, if you're married and you do married filing jointly, that would be combined there on that line 1A. So as Kate was walking through that example, that would be yours. And then you would go through that same kind of thought process for your spouse. And that total would be combined on 1A.
Yeah. And a couple of things to watch out for. We're not going to go through, if you are looking at a tax return, you'll see 1A through Z. We're not going to hit all those items because it would be extensive. But the one I do tell people to watch out for is the dependent care benefits. So if your employer offers you a dependent care savings account where you can put pre-tax dollars into a flexible account, pay for daycare and get reimbursed, you have to fill out an extra form to tell the IRS how you use that money. If you don't, they'll add that back into your income and it will become taxable. So just a heads up, if a number appears on that line, it means you have another form to fill out and make sure you get all the exclusions you should get.
Good, duly noted. So we'll kind of scroll on down to some of the more common sections like in 2 and 3A and talk about what does some of that mean? So what are some examples of like interest that might show up or dividends that might show up?
Yeah, interest and dividends, these for most people are a little more self-explanatory, but you will get a statement. So on the like first line, a W-2 is what most people are pretty familiar with. It's what we're, again, unless you're self-employed, you're waiting for every year. Interest, you'd get a form 1099 INT. INT stands for interest, or dividends, you get a DIV for dividends. They try to keep at least that part of it less confusing. Interest is interest generated generally off bank accounts. If you turned in savings bonds, you might have some tax exempt interest that would show up on different lines. It's all reported on there and broken down on your form, but you could have different forms. So again, generally bank accounts, it could be off of like if you have a brokerage account, you might earn interest on cash while it's sitting there. If one of the fun ones, you might actually earn interest from the IRS. If you had a large refund that took them a while to send to you after 2020, when things were delayed, we actually saw a lot of people, the IRS was paying them interest. And then dividends is dividends off of any kind of stock and mutual funds, exchange traded fund, those kind of holdings will pay out dividends. And you have to claim that as income as you earn them if they're not in a retirement account. So you would get a tax form and report it there. And you might notice there's a 3A and a 3B, ordinary dividends and qualified dividends. Qualified dividends, just to keep it brief for our podcast and simple, the biggest thing to know here is the higher percentage you have classified as qualified dividends, the more are going to get taxed at the capital gains rates. Capital gains rates are lower than your ordinary income rates. So as much income as you can push into that category is great. So just a thing we're saying, it tells you a story. It's telling you a little bit about your investments. If you don't have many qualified, a lot of them are ordinary dividends, it might be worth talking to an advisor to see if you could make some tweaks to your portfolio to help your tax situation.
Yeah. That's definitely one thing we get into in meetings with clients, and it can be a lot to think about and to understand. But I think the big picture, big point is, you know, kind of what Kate said, wanting to, the more that's in that qualified, kind of the better off you are. And if you have an investment account, definitely continue to educate yourself on what exactly that means. So, okay. So I'm looking at 4, 5, and 6, and my mind is automatically kind of thinking, okay, if you're working, more than likely, you may not see anything in this section. And if you're retired, you probably would. If you're taking any money out of your IRA and then Social Security, if you've started drawing your Social Security, you'll see something pop up in these boxes. Do you want to chat about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is kind of nice that they lump them together as what we typically think about as your retirement section. So the, you know, line four is IRA distributions. And then line five is pensions and annuities. To most people, they're going to feel like a very similar thing. It's just, where did you pull it from? Was it an IRA that you have or a pension that you're getting paid from an employer or a life insurance type annuity payout? Distributions off of these, if you put it in pre-tax, pretty generally when you take it out, you pay tax on it. Sometimes you will see, especially on annuities or certain life insurance payouts, there will be an amount that is like a gross amount paid out and then a second box that shows the taxable amount. Sometimes there's a reason all of it isn't taxable. So then the company will do the math for you and tell you what's taxable and what's not taxable. So sometimes the amounts on that line A versus B are different. So also something to keep a heads up if you do a rollover. So say you leave an employer, you had a 401k and you want to roll that to your IRA, you will still get a tax statement. It's not taxable, but you might have, you know, $200,000 of distribution on the A column, like 4A example, but then the B column would be $0. It's not taxable, but you still need to report that you pulled the money out. If you are pulling from your pension and or from an IRA and you don't have any exclusions, make sure you withhold tax on it because it is taxable. And if you are under 59 and a half and you don't have any sort of exclusions to the penalties, make sure you withhold extra tax because that will be taxed at your ordinary tax rate plus there's a 10% penalty. So this is one thing I've seen people get hurt pretty bad on the tax return if they're just not aware of how it works. Or if you had a loan on your 401k and you left your employer, something terminated, anything that terminates that loan, it immediately becomes taxable. So they will send you a 1099 and there's nothing there to withhold on. So just if you have a loan, be aware it could become taxable and it would get reported here as well. Before I jump into Social Security, Carrie, anything you can think about extra on IRAs?
I don't think so. I think in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a podcast episode over 401k loans. So I think that'll be something that we can dive into a little bit deeper in a few weeks if that's something listeners are interested in. So little plug in for that. So yeah.
A little teaser. Yeah, I could encourage people. It's something that's not understood a lot. So that'd be great. Yeah. And then Social Security, you always have to report what you earn from Social Security, but the amount that is taxable varies anywhere from 0 to 85% of your benefits. And it's all based on what your modified adjusted gross income is. So it's your income minus some deductions, plus some additions. there's a pretty complicated worksheet behind it, but you get through that to figure out what percentage of your benefits are taxable. So you may see none if your overall income's lower. If your overall income's higher, it would be as much as 85% that is over there on line 6B under the taxable amount that you have to include.
Right. So that's just a reminder that, yes, this is the main page that you're looking at, but a lot of times there's all these other pages that follow this page that says, why is this amount taxed? And there's a reason behind it and there's math behind it. But for today, we'll just stick with that. So,
yeah, I know. I always sort of chuckle when I get a full like TurboTax file. If someone's used that software or any other providers, they give you all of the worksheets. It's wonderful. So you can see the math. It's just surprised some people once in a while of how long that is because every line has its own calculation quite often that it's going through.
Yeah. It is, as I've learned more over the years, if you're willing to take the time and scroll down through all the pages, a lot of times, like if we want to, you know, move on to say, let's talk about line 7 and a capital gain or loss there, or even line 8, schedule 1 income, you know, you may see a number in 7 or 8 and there's no really explanation. So you're going to have to scroll down into your return and say, okay, well, what was my capital gain or loss? Or what is the other income from Schedule 1. So it's just digging into the details of those. So do we want to talk about what is what are capital gains or losses?
Yeah, absolutely. So line 7 is, it'll say, you'll notice it says attach Schedule D if required. That's one of those schedules Carrie just mentioned. There might be another form you have to find or report your income on. a capital gain or a capital loss comes when you sell an asset. The most traditional thing people think about is a stock. You buy a stock, you sell a stock, a mutual fund, an ETF, any kind of investment holding, and you have to report that. So if, for example, if you bought it at $100 a share, you hold it for years and you sell it at $150 a share, you'd have $50 of a capital gain that you have to report on the tax return. And then we go on that Schedule D. And then depending on if it was held short term, less than a year, or long term, more than a year, it's taxed differently. So short term gains are taxed at your ordinary tax rate. And long-term gains are taxed at the capital gains rate. And maybe at the end, Carrie, we can talk a little bit about, we keep saying the word ordinary or capital gain rate, but what those mean as well. We'll describe those a little bit more. Okay. But capital gain rates are preferable because they're lower. So if you can move anything to long-term, it's generally beneficial because you'll pay less tax on that gain when the time comes. And then the other thing that goes here is when you have, example, a brokerage account or you hold mutual funds, you may get capital gain distributions. These will come on your tax statement that you get from them. Sometimes you don't even have to file the additional schedule. You'll notice a little box on the tax return that says, if not required, check here. That typically comes when people have capital gain distributions. And these come from mutual funds. Mutual funds will push these out at the end of the year, to keep it simple. At the end of the year, they'll do some accounting, they'll pass the gains on to you, and you have to record those as well and claim income on those because your investment did have value and have some gains inside. This is one of those things when we are doing, and Carrie is the investment guru, so to speak, that we are looking at on tax returns. Actually, a big thing I look for with new clients when we're going to start looking at a portfolio is to see, do you have a lot of capital gain distributions? Do we want to make some changes to the portfolio? Because you can't control those. You can't control the timing. You can't control the amount. And if you don't have a lot of holdings, your portfolio is smaller, it doesn't impact you all that much. But as your portfolio grows or you hold that fund for 30 years, those distributions can be quite significant and give you a surprise tax bill as well.
Fun.
Yeah.
All right. So that's just kind of a few examples of what might show up in the capital gains section. And for the sake of time, we'll move on because we could continue on that as well. So let's talk about line eight, other income from Schedule One. Do you want to kind of let everybody know, like, what could come from a Schedule One?
Yeah, absolutely. So for those of you that might remember the older tax returns, most of these items on Schedule One used to be on the 1040. They would just be, they'd be in that income section on the front of it, just a little bit lower. But when they supposedly simplified the tax return and added three more schedules, a lot of these income items moved to the Schedule One. So now the Schedule One is an extra form, a schedule is just an extra form that gets attached to your tax return. Everything that was on the lower portion of income on the front of the 1040 and then the bottom of the 1040 on the old returns is now on this Schedule One. So page one of the Schedule One is going to have all of your additional sources of incomes. So if you have a number that is carrying through on line eight, that you're going to need to go to your Schedule One and see where it's coming from, because it could be many things totaled together. Examples of things would be a business. If you have a business, any income or loss from that would be on the Schedule One. Real estate, farms, those are your, again, income generating activities, so to speak. If you're out working, those will all have separate schedules that will carry over to that Schedule One. If you've got unemployment income, a lot of people have unemployment, that gets reported there. If you're receiving alimony that is taxable, not all alimony is. You need to speak to a tax advisor, your tax person, to know based on your alimony if it was. But if it's taxable, that would get included. And there's a whole other, just other things that could get added. A few things I see more often that are kind of fun are gambling. If you win at slots or in the lottery over a certain amount, you'll get a tax statement and you need to claim that as income. Heads up, if you do have some winnings, celebrate, but make an estimated tax payment just to save everybody a headache and a surprise tax bill at the end of the year. If you work jury duty, you get a stipend each day. That's actually taxable as well. So there's a lot of other just lines. If there's type of income you have, you're not sure if it's taxable, it's probably going to show up on your Schedule One.
A lot of fun stuff on there. I learned a little bit just now. So fun. Okay. My takeaway from that and note, like, observation is if you have income on that, it would be beneficial for you to scroll down to that Schedule One and make sure you understand where it's all coming from, and just dig into those lines kind of yourself, because the information's there. Just take the time to dig into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that kind of brings us to total income, which is line 9. So this is going to be your total income, and we kind of, it gets a little bit repetitive here from 9 to 11 to 15. You've got total income, adjusted gross income, and finally your taxable income. So once we get to total income.
Yeah, they are kind of.
Go ahead.
No, you go in and I'll jump in after that.
Okay. So total income and then any adjustments to your income, that also comes from Schedule One. So again, dig into that. That could be an assortment of different things. I don't know if there's a quick, easy example, Kate, that falls into that.
Yeah, your adjustments are going to be things like IRA deductions. If you're making contributing to an HSA that's not through an employer, you're doing independently, that would fall there. If you're a teacher and you qualify for the educator deduction, any self-employed retirement plan, student loan interest.
Okay.
I think those are the primary ones. There's some other ones in there, but those are the biggest ones that we see.
Yeah. So then you would deduct that, and that would get you to your adjusted gross income. And there's your number. And then I think the next big step is, do you take the standard deduction or do you take the itemized deduction? And right now, a lot of people are falling under that standard deduction. I do find that people still have a little bit of confusion around that, whether they can do the itemized, just because in the years past, the standard deduction was a lot lower.
Right. Yeah. Prior to the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, the standard deduction was lower and there were additional items that you could deduct, as well as taxes are now capped at $10,000. So income taxes, property tax, like personal property, like car taxes, some states pay, real estate taxes. Now you're capped at a maximum of $10,000. So you'd need other deductions to be able to itemize. Other deductions that are now allowed are mortgage interest, charitable contributions, and also medical expenses. But before you can even add medical expenses in, you need to get over I call the hump. It's 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. You have to deduct from those expenses before you can even add them to your list of itemized expenses. So it is a little bit more restrictive now than it used to be, partly because there's less you can deduct and more that you have to have to be able to do it. In the past, a lot of people had unreimbursed business expenses. So if you worked for your employer and you drove a lot and they didn't reimburse you for mileage, you could deduct that. If you were maintaining just different, if you work from home, in the years before working from home was really popular, there was a way to take a deduction for that. If you were paying for uniforms out of pocket, those were gone with the tax change.
Yeah.
Now that is supposed to potentially change again, but that is still to be determined what we will say. So for right now, it is a little bit harder to itemize, but it's something you can always kind of look at the number and see what makes more sense for you.
Yeah. Do you find that most people are that a whole nother subject, like, are most people just falling under the standard deduction at this point?
Yeah, a lot of people are. I mean, there's still people that can if they are earlier into their mortgage, so they have that interest that pushes them up. Mm-hmm. People that tend to donate more. So there are some people that for sure can. And there's a couple other little things that can be donated. But compared to pre-tax law change, it's a much, much smaller percentage of people that are able to itemize, and more people taking that standard deduction.
I just think from an education standpoint, if you were looking at this and you're like, well, should I take the standard deduction or the itemized deduction? It really isn't a decision. Like, you have to decide. You will just look at the standard deduction and like say, okay, well, the standard deduction for 2022 was $25,900 for married filing jointly. If you don't have more itemized deductions than that amount, then you're not going to worry about itemizing and digging into that. I probably should have said the 2023 standard deduction amount.
Yeah, you can usually eyeball. you can usually eyeball it a little bit. Like, at this point, I have a little experience and I can look at it and I generally know. If it's close, Even if I don't think there's a way that they're going to itemize, but it's going to be within a few thousand, I still go ahead and complete the schedule just to make sure, just to verify mm-hmm. that we're not missing mm-hmm. anything. And it's not a real difficult form to complete. So you can yeah. always do that just to make sure you're getting everything you need.
Yep. So again, if you're interested, dig into, you know, standard deduction versus itemized deduction, educate yourself. And we're always happy to answer any questions. Okay. So we're kind of to just like the very bottom, the qualified business income deduction. That's if you own a business. Often mm-hmm. you can deduct some of that income, and there's math behind that as well. And there'll be, obviously, there's a form for you to dig into and see if you qualify for that. And then that kind of brings us to your taxable income. So there's your number where you can see, what am I going to have to pay taxes on?
Yeah. And then from there, you'll do the tax calculation will happen. And then there are other credits and reductions that we won't get into today. But I did want to circle back earlier when I was mentioning ordinary and capital gains rates. And mm-hmm. I think it would be a good maybe wrap up point just to explain that once you get your tax, it's composed of a few things that you can look at. So most of your income is going to be taxed according to the tax tables. Now, our tax system is a progressive tax system, and I find a lot of people don't understand this. So when we tell someone your tax, your marginal tax rate is the 22% tax bracket, they think that all of their income was taxed at 22%. When in reality, we have all of these steps. So the first part of your income is taxed at 10%, and then it goes up to 12. Some of it's taxed at the next chunk at 12%, the next chunk at 22%, and then the next at 24% and on up if you have more income. So I like to kind of explain that a little bit again, because I have heard people before say, hey, I'm going to get a raise, but maybe I don't want it if it's going to put me in a tax bracket. And I'm like, no, take it. Take every dollar in your pocket. It's just the newer money, the money on top of that, that will be taxed higher. But I like to look at, quite often, I will take what that final total tax is. So on your return, like line 24 will be your total tax after credits. And then if you divide it by your total income up on line 9, that's your average tax rate. So when we say you're marginal, like that highest rate's the maybe you're in the 24% tax bracket, you might find that your average tax rate, what you're actually paying, is more like 15 or 16%. So it's a really good number to know. And the other thing I mentioned was capital gains. So when you have long-term capital gains or qualified dividends, they go through a different worksheet and a different, it's going to get all show up as tax to you. Like everything's going to be included in that tax line. But internally, there's a different calculation being performed. So the highest tax rate you're going to pay is going to be 20%. Most people fall in 0%. So if you are under a certain income limit and you have capital gain income, long-term capital gain income, you're paying 0% on that. So if you're lower income and you want to recognize some gains, maybe an opportunity for you. Above that, most people fall in the 15%. So if you're in the 22% marginal tax bracket, your capital gains are going to be taxed at 15%. So it's automatically saving you 7%, or in the 24% bracket, you save even more. And then for higher income individuals, it does go up to 20%. But across the board, it's just lower than whatever that ordinary rate is. So as I was kind of throwing those terms around earlier, I wanted to make sure I explained those briefly. And again, just something to look out for and be aware of.
Yeah, I hope that everyone kind of learned something today, and that you can take away and learn a little bit about your own tax return. Thanks for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And don't hesitate to reach out if you guys have any questions.
You've been listening to Money Roots, your go-to podcast for making personal finance accessible and approachable. Thanks for joining us today. Amy and her team have enjoyed guiding you through the roots of your financial journey. Remember, whether you're planting new seeds of financial knowledge or nurturing the growth of your existing financial plans, Money Roots is here to support you every step of the way. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and visit our website at www.rootedpg.com/podcasts for more resources. And of course, subscribe to Money Roots wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. A big thank you to the sponsor, Rooted Planning Group, for making this show possible. At Rooted Planning Group, they're committed to helping you cultivate a thriving financial future. Until next time, keep growing your money roots.